Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. At the National Day of Prayer at the White House, Rabbi Israel Goldstein spoke about what it was like to come face-to-face with the shooter at the Chabad Synagogue in Poway. President Donald Trump issued his strongest denunciation of hate crimes targeting houses of worship of all religions, and we'll have some audio excerpts from their statements on today's show. Mayor Bill Wells from El Cajon also attended the National Day of Prayer and brought a special gift to the president on Holocaust Remembrance Day. The annual homeless count for San Diego is in. While homelessness countywide has dropped, some East County communities saw substantial increases. In unincorporated El Cajon Sunday night, a person driving a white SUV opened fire with a shotgun, injuring a nearby motorist in the head and face. We'll have details on Crime Beat. On Green Scene, hear about some big improvements for Lindo Lake County Park approved by the supervisors. Plus, we'll have news about a court decision just in to block fracking off of Southern California's coast. Firefighters rescued a man trapped in a burning hotel in El Cajon early Monday morning. Supervisors have amended the social host ordinance to include marijuana as well as alcohol. The Board of Supervisors also took action to increase funding for building affordable housing, and we'll have details. Then, from Public News Service, we have some national news, including today's top story. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has been asked to testify next week in a congressional committee on his report, which Mueller has indicated was misrepresented by Attorney General William Barr. On Destination East County, hear about some top events coming up across our region, from wine and food tasting events to concerts, parades, historical reenactments, festivals, and more. We'll also have information for you on some springtime hikes in county parks across our region. Get tips today on how to attract butterflies and hummingbirds to your garden from Master Gardener Connie Beck. Plus, we'll be replaying a fascinating Sounds of History interview with Dick Panic from the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. We'll also have news about a revitalization committee for Borrego Springs that's being organized by Supervisor Jim Desmond and how you can get your input. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The National Day of Prayer service hosted by President Donald Trump at the White House Rose Garden on May 2nd included two local VIPs, Rabbi Israel Goldstein of Poway and El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells. Trump previously drew criticism after a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017 when violence resulted in death of a woman protester at a march led by torch-carrying neo-Nazis. When Trump said there were very fine people on both sides and did not forcefully denounce hate groups. But at the National Day of Prayer this past week, held on Holocaust Remembrance Day, President Trump strongly denounced crimes targeting houses of worship in the U.S. and around the world, citing recent attacks on churches in Sri Lanka, a mosque in New Zealand, and synagogues in Pittsburgh and Poway. The president also forcefully spoke out against anti-Semitism, stating,
"We will fight with all our strength and everything that we have in our bodies to defeat anti-Semitism, to end the attacks on the Jewish people, and to conquer all forms of persecution, intolerance, and hate."
After meeting privately for 25 minutes with Rabbi Goldstein, the president asked the rabbi to speak, praising him for his courage during the shooting at the Chabad of Poway Synagogue. The president said Rabbi Goldstein's courage and devotion during the Passover attack touches every heart and soul in America.
"I faced evil and the worst darkness of all time, right in our own house of worship, right at Chabad of Poway. I faced him, and I had to make a decision. Do I run and hide, or do I stand tall and fight and protect all those that are there? We cannot control what others do, but we can control how we react. My dear Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, taught me the way we react to darkness is with light. It was that moment that I made a decision. No matter what happens to me, I'm going to save as many people as possible I should have been dead by now, based on the rule of statistics. I was in the line of fire, bullets flying all the way. My fingers got blown off, but I did not stop. The Rebbe taught me, as a Jew, you are a soldier of God. You need to stand tall and stand fast and do whatever it takes to change the world. My life has changed forever, but it changed so I could make change. And I could help others learn how to be strong, how to be mighty and tall.
The rabbi also praised Lori Kay, whom witnesses said sacrificed her life to save the rabbi, who in turn saved many children. He recalled her as a blessed memory, a 60-year-old dear friend of our congregation, and he announced that on June 2nd, a march will be held in her memory. This year's Prayer Day theme was Love One Another. El Cajon Mayor Wells brought the president a statue of a dove made from pieces of a rocket launched at Israel, along with a letter from members of the San Diego Jewish community. On Facebook, he wrote, "I'm happy to say that the Secret Service, after a fair amount of scrutiny, accepted them both and were willing to give them to the president." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
For the second year in a row, the annual point-in-time homeless count for 2019 found a 6% drop in the number of homeless people living on the streets and in shelters across San Diego County. The count found a 1% increase in those who are sheltered and a 10% decrease in those left unsheltered. Led by the Regional Task Force on the Homeless, the count found 8,102 homeless people, of whom 45% are sheltered, with the majority, 55%, unsheltered. East County has 13% of the county's total homeless population. Some East County communities saw a drop in the number of homeless, while others had an increase. El Cajon, the only East County community that has homeless shelters, has 787 homeless people, but only 38% are sheltered, 62% remain without shelter. The total number of El Cajon homeless is up significantly from last year's total of 679, and a higher percentage are without shelter. Last year, the city had 57% of its homeless in shelters. The biggest drop in East County communities is in Spring Valley, Casa de Oro, where the number of homeless counted this year was 67, half last year's total of 134. La Mesa held relatively steady, with 42 homeless compared to 46 last year, but all are unsheltered. The city is organizing a task force on homelessness to address the problem. Homelessness is up in Lemon Grove, with 52 homeless people counted compared to 35 last year, and Santee's homeless population grew from 35 last year to 46 this year. Lakeside had 72 homeless during the count, similar to last year's count of 74. The Alpine Crest Tehesa area had 16 homeless in this year's count, a more than 50% increase over last year's 10. Ramona is counted in the North County area, so is not reflected in the East County numbers, but Ramona had a huge spike, 97 homeless counted this year, up sharply from just 14 last year, and none of them are sheltered. Julian is not listed on the count, but Julian residents have told our reporters that there are homeless people in their mountain community. Countywide, the city of San Diego still has the lion's share of homeless, more than 5,000, of whom over half are unsheltered. Some homeless advocates have voiced skepticism over the county's accuracy regarding people living in vehicles in the city, with only 275 people counted living in cars and 37 in RVs. Anne Menashe, senior attorney for Disability Rights California, says her office has been in touch with nearly 90 people living in vehicles in the city, most of them in RVs. She says the official count numbers simply make no sense. The San Diego Housing Alliance issued a press release stating, "This is an absurdly low and highly politicized undercount, coming just at a time when the city has unveiled a new safe lot and is proposing a draconian new vehicle habitation ordinance." The nonprofit group notes that 2 years ago, the count found 817 people living in vehicles. Rents have risen sharply since then. Countywide, the count found that 78% of the homeless reported becoming homeless in San Diego, not moving here from somewhere else. Over a third, 36%, have a physical disability. Veterans account for 10% of the homeless, and 12% of the homeless are youths under age 24. Among our region's homeless, 3% are families with at least one child. Over 1,500 people volunteered to participate in this year's homeless count, which this year included one-on-one interviews with homeless people to help assess their needs. Deacon Jim Vargas, president and CEO of Father Joe's Villages and secretary of the Regional Task Force on the Homeless, says, "I'm encouraged to see our community finding new ways to gather more complete information about the state of homelessness in San Diego." He adds, "This count is also a reminder for all of us that too many people are still struggling. As we look beyond the numbers, we know that each person experiencing homelessness has a unique story and needs a unique combination of housing and services in order to achieve stability. A comprehensive plan that spans the region will be necessary to effectively and efficiently deploy adequate resources." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
The driver of a white Ford Explorer or Expedition SUV fired a shotgun into a vehicle on Las Coches Road in unincorporated El Cajon near Interstate 8 shortly before midnight Sunday night. Shotgun pellets struck a rear passenger in the face and head. The shooting victim was alert and conscious and was transported to Sharps Memorial Hospital with fortunately what are considered to be non-life-threatening injuries, according to Sergeant Tingley. Sheriff's deputies responded to the call reporting the shooting near the Shell station on Camino Canada around 11:52 p.m. Three people were in the vehicle that was fired upon. The SUV fled the scene after firing three rounds. Lakeside Sheriff's detectives are handling the investigation. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors have voted unanimously to approve $7.5 million for the first phase of a major improvement project at Lindo Lake County Park in Lakeside. Phase 1 aims to improve water quality in Lindo Lake's East Basin by deepening the lake, adding water, and taking steps to keep sediment out. A fishing pier and birdwatching station will also be built. In addition, picnic tables, benches, and water-efficient irrigation are planned, as well as restoration. The work is expected to begin this winter and be completed in summer of 2021. A second phase of the project to restore the West Basin is expected to be brought to the board as the first phase nears completion. Board Chairwoman Diane Jacob, whose second supervisorial district includes Lakeside, says the improvement project was long awaited by the Lakeside community. Lakeside was built in the 1800s around Lindo Lake, the only natural lake in San Diego County. Lindo Lake was cut off from its natural source of replenishment in the 1960s when a dam was built upstream on Quail Creek to create Lake Jennings. That move, over time, shrank the amount of water in Lindo Lake, which was split into two basins where water quality deteriorated. Today, the lake is primarily replenished by urban and stormwater runoff from surrounding hillsides and groundwater. The 55-acre Lindo Lake Park is the centerpiece of the Lakeside community, home to Lakeside's community center, a teen center, playgrounds, a picnic shelter, a ball field, outdoor fitness station, tennis courts, and a skate park. Supervisor Jacob summed up the planned improvements in a word: awesome. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lakeside, this is Jonathan Getz.
Environmental groups have won another round in the battle over fracking in federal waters off the coast of California. Late Tuesday, a judge denied an oil company's request to frack in the Santa Barbara Channel. The company, called Decor LLC, had asked for an exception to a moratorium put in place last December. That ruling forbids the Trump administration from approving permits for fracking or acidizing in the Pacific until proper environmental review is done. Steve Jones with the Center for Biological Diversity called the company's request ridiculous.
DCOR had no good reason for wanting to do this other than increase its profits at the cost of marine wildlife and coastal communities.
The ruling only applies to fracking and acidizing at existing platforms and would not prevent the Trump administration from issuing permits to expand drilling in federal waters. And the revised five-year plan for that is expected to come out very soon. DCOR claimed in court papers that the moratorium would hurt company finances, but the judge said the protection of marine life takes priority. The judge ruled that the feds violated the Endangered Species Act when they approved the permits, citing concerns for the health of sea otters. Jones says the animals are bouncing back, but are very sensitive to the chemicals used in fracking for oil.
If it gets any oil on its fur, it can get hypothermia, and we need to be protecting vulnerable marine life, not oil industry profits.
The decision gives the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service time to finish its environmental assessment. The judge also ruled that the moratorium will stay in place unless the California Coastal Commission finds that fracking is consistent with its coastal management program. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Firefighters rescued a man in a burning hotel in El Cajon early Monday morning. Heartland Fire and Rescue crews from El Cajon, with assistance from Santee Fire and San Miguel Fire, were dispatched to the fire at the Relax Inn on West Main Street at 5 a.m. Fire crews arrived within 5 minutes of receiving a call, discovering smoke and fire coming from a downstairs bedroom. Sonny Segura with Heartland Fire and Rescue says firefighters quickly attacked the fire and immediately discovered an adult male hanging from a bathroom window in the affected fire room. Fire crews gained access to the victim and then removed him from the hotel, he adds. The victim was transported to UCSD Hospital with smoke inhalation injuries. Crews knocked down the fire within 8 minutes. The cause of the fire is currently under investigation by the San Diego Sheriff's Bomb and Arson Department. Reporting for East County Magazine in El Cajon, this is Jonathan Getz.
The County Board of Supervisors has voted unanimously to amend its social host ordinance to add marijuana in addition to alcohol. Adults providing marijuana or alcohol to minors can now be arrested and charged with crimes. The amendment is a result of marijuana being more readily available after the passage of Proposition 64, which made its use legal for adults over 21. The board will vote again on the item on May 21st after a second reading. If adopted, the amendments will become effective 30 days after the vote in all unincorporated areas of the county. Adults who violate the ordinances can be cited or arrested, fined $1,000 or more, sent to jail for up to 6 months, required to do up to 32 hours of community service, and billed for law enforcement services. All jurisdictions in San Diego County have social host ordinances in effect for alcohol, and local law enforcement agencies have increased enforcement, issuing hundreds of citations in recent years. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
County supervisors have voted to spend an additional $25 million to build more affordable housing units in our region. 2 years ago, the county established the Innovative Housing Initiative to increase the region's supply of affordable housing. An initial $25 million launched the program, making money available to developers to build or rehab housing for low-income households and vulnerable populations. So far, that's resulted in 453 permanent affordable housing units available from the first $12 million spent. Chairwoman Diane Jacobs says the county expects, when the first $25 million is all spent, a total of 1,000 affordable housing units will be built. The new $25 million allocation is expected to do the same, creating a total of 2,000 affordable housing units. The units created will go to homeless families, families in need, homeless veterans and veterans with special needs, seniors and older adults with very low incomes, people with developmental disabilities, people with mental illness, those recovering from substance abuse, and domestic violence survivors. Supervisor Greg Cox acknowledges that California is an expensive place to live, adding, from South County to East County to North County, families are finding it harder to keep up with the rising rents or finding homes that they can afford. The Board of Supervisors also voted to allow the Health and Human Services Agency to apply for state emergency funds to help those who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. That could bring in up to $1.4 million to be used for rental assistance, housing relocation, and prevention of homelessness. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
Researchers at San Diego State University and the University of Southern California have opened the nation's first public resource center on third-hand smoke, the toxic residue from tobacco smoke that can saturate homes, businesses, hotels, and cars for years after the last cigarette is stubbed out. Funded by a cigarette tax increase approved by voters in 2016, the Third Hand Smoke Resource Center will offer educational materials, workshops, and other resources on hidden substances and the health hazards they pose. A new website, thirdhandsmoke.org, aims to increase public awareness of third-hand smoke. George Matt, director of the Resource Center, says there's a big illusion that when tobacco smoke disappears, we're safe. But some of the most toxic compounds get embedded in carpets, coat surfaces, and penetrate into walls. Particles and vapors also become embedded in ceilings, carpets, furniture, cabinets, bedding, and toys. These substances have been detected years after smoking has stopped. They impact hotel and motel patrons, apartment tenants, resale home buyers, motorists, and ride-hailing passengers. In a recent study of 220 San Diego County apartments, smoke residue was found in all 220 units, despite very few of them housing smokers at the time. In some units, the levels were as heavy as those of smoking rooms at hotels. According to Matt, the center and its website are intended to make the public more aware of third-hand smoke and help create indoor environments free of tobacco smoke pollutants. Residue from smoking tobacco and vaping electronic cigarettes includes a mixture of toxic chemicals known to cause cancer and asthma. These chemicals can affect respiratory and cardiovascular health and may reduce the body's ability to heal and fight infection. Infants, small children, and pets are particularly vulnerable because of surfaces they come into contact with or put into their mouths. Repainting a home or apartment does not eliminate third-hand smoke contamination from a heavy smoker, Matt says. To get rid of nicotine and carcinogens, you really have to gut the interior and rebuild, he advises. That means taking out the drywall and floors. In cars driven by heavy smokers, he notes, there is not really a solution. Third-hand smoke pollutants are in the upholstery, ceiling liners, and ventilation system. The center will conduct workshops and webinars for health professionals, policymakers, apartment and hotel managers, car dealers, and the public to learn about third-hand smoke. It also plans to develop do-it-yourself test kits, working with businesses and community groups to test for third-hand smoke pollution. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The Public News Service daily newscast for Monday, May the 6th, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. Mid-May is now the tentative date for Mueller to testify before the House. Also on our Monday rundown, a new study shows a growing teacher wage gap, plus property owners are seeking justice as pipeline companies seize their land. First, here's our top story. Robert Mueller, the man who led the nearly two-year investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election, has been asked to testify to Congress on May the 15th. Yahoo News reports that's according to David Cicilline, a Democrat and member of the House Judiciary Committee. He told Fox News Sunday that Mueller's representatives had tentatively agreed to that date, but later clarified in a tweet that nothing has been agreed to yet. There is a growing teacher shortage in states like Pennsylvania. Andrea Sears reports a new study says that raising teacher salaries could help.
A new analysis from the Economic Policy Institute shows Pennsylvania teachers are paid an average of 13.5% less than similar college graduates in other fields. According to Stephen Hertzenberg, who heads the Keystone Research Center, the minimum pay for teachers in the state hasn't changed since 1988, when it was set at just $18,500, about what a fast food worker makes today.
Everybody deserves a living wage, including fast food workers. But by underpaying teachers, we're not only hurting teachers, we're hurting students, our education system, and our state's economy in the long run.
In his 2019 budget address, Governor Tom Wolf proposed raising the minimum teacher salary to $45,000 a year. Education advocates are asking the General Assembly to include that raise in the state budget.
In states like Pennsylvania, raising the minimum pay to $45,000 a year would help attract and retain qualified teachers across the state. Meantime, more than 23,000 Kentuckians received a bachelor's degree in 2018. That's according to another new report.
That's a 2% increase over the previous year. The report also found that graduation rates for low-income and minority students were higher than the overall graduation rate. Aaron Thompson with the Kentucky Council on Post-Secondary Education says the state is on track to reach its goal of 60% of the working-age population completing a degree or certificate by 2030.
Now, the governor has clearly stated that he wants this to be the advanced manufacturing capital of the world. And with that, he has doubled down on his agenda, as well as the House and the Senate, to talk about how can we ramp up, if you will, of those credentials that will fulfill those middle-skill jobs.
Thompson says manufacturing, healthcare, and information technology are poised to dominate Kentucky's employment landscape. These fields tend to require workers with some level of specialized training. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
According to the data from the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Economy, nearly all jobs created in the U.S. since 2008 and the recession have gone to workers with at least some post-secondary education. And after years of debate, Nebraska lawmakers are narrowing in on a compromise bill that would address rising property taxes, a move that could resolve a crisis facing many rural farmers and ranchers.
Land values skyrocketed on paper over the past decade, but incomes haven't increased enough to cover bigger tax bills, and as a result, budgets for public schools and other priorities have been stretched thin. Jordan Rasmussen with the Center for Rural Affairs says LB 289 is an opportunity to bring the state's tax code up to date and believes with just a few changes it can benefit all Nebraskans.
Taxes have increased, especially for our rural residents, with their property taxes over the last few years. The state has not been bringing in the revenues necessary to help fulfill those obligations to educate our students.
Counties with high property values frequently don't qualify for state public education funding, and to keep schools open, rural districts have had to raise mill levies. LB 289 would lower property taxes, but as currently written, the state would make up for that lost revenue primarily by increasing sales taxes and removing exemptions from services such as beauty shops and lawn care. Critics say the move is really a tax shift and would raise taxes for nearly all Nebraskans who make purchases every day. I'm Eric Galatis.
And finally, Tramell Gomes tells us property owners are fighting back against pipeline companies who seize their land through eminent domain.
In 2015, Gary Erb and his wife received a letter from the Oklahoma-based energy company Williams, which stated that it would be seizing a portion of their land for the construction of a natural gas pipeline. However, the couple has yet to receive any compensation for the pipeline, which cuts across their homestead in Pennsylvania. Erb says this situation is far from uncommon, as his legal team has found companies have seized land from hundreds of private owners while offering below market value and using legal loopholes to delay compensation.
You have these pipeline companies that do this every single day, and they're preying on the uneducated private landowner to not know how to respond. So they take full advantage of their knowledge and their deep pockets and their scare tactics.
Erb went to court and a judge ruled in favor of the company, as the Federal Natural Gas Act allows companies to take possession of the land without first negotiating a price with the landowner. In a statement, the Williams company said they work to ensure that landowners are quickly compensated for their properties.
By the way, companies building the Atlantic Coast and Mountain Valley pipelines have also been able to take land needed for construction before paying for the property. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week news and a cruisin' with Public News Service.
We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
May activities include El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert, the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College, Classic Cruise Night Centennial Season in downtown El Cajon, Vintage Alpine, the Lilac Festival in Santa Isabel, Sky Tours in Julian, Open Farm Day at Oasis Camel Dairy, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, America on Main Street in El Cajon, a Gunsmoke fundraiser for a local Lions Club in El Cajon, and the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest.
El Cajon's popular Dinner and a Concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. The season opens on May 3rd with Sully and the Blue-Eyed Band. Other May performers include Wild Heart, Stars in the Water, Santana Ways, and Polyester Express. Shows will continue all summer long. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before attending the concert. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Some of the region's top young musical talents will converge on May 4th at Cuyamaca College when the 11th annual Coyote Music Festival returns to the Rancho San Diego campus's Grand Lawn. The family-friendly community festival features groups with styles ranging from dream pop to alternative folk and R&B, playing on two stages from noon to 4 p.m. Food trucks and vendors will be on hand, too. The entirely student-run event culminates a semester-long music industry seminar class that covers everything involved in staging a music festival, including marketing, promotions, production, booking, staging, and sound engineering. For a schedule of performers, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. On May 1st, Tri-5 Chevys will be featured, so guests are encouraged to wear your poodle skirts and leather jackets. May 8th is Corvette Cruise Night, and on May 15th, it's Kids Day to Play. May 22nd is Military Appreciation Day, and May 29th is Convertible Night. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
The 29th Annual Vintage Alpine, a fundraiser for the Alpine Kiwanis Club, will be held on May 5th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs. Described as a wine and food experience in the country, this event features 32 wineries from California and around the world, plus tastes from restaurants countywide. The event also includes live music and a silent auction in a beautiful garden setting. For tickets and details, visit vintagealpine.org.
The Lilac Festival continues at Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside Julian, each weekend through May 12th. Lilac cuttings and plants are available for purchase. You can also sign up for activities including candle making, hay rides, a petting zoo, reptile show, jug band performance, archery, tomahawk throwing, and more. For full details, you can check fortcross.com.
The Observer's Inn in Julian is offering guided tours of the night sky at its astronomical observatory houses and research-grade telescopes on Saturday, May 11th, from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Each sky tour is unique and may include planets, star clusters, nebula, galaxies, comets, and the moon. Advance reservations are required, and there is a fee for those who are not staying overnight at the inn. For reservations, you can call 760-765-0088 or visit observersinn.com/skytours.htm.
Paul Combs and Melanie Grinnell will perform a jazz saxophone and piano concert on May 12th from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Mission Trails Church. The concert series was formerly held at Mission Trails Regional Park, but has relocated to the Mission Trails Church with monthly Sunday concerts scheduled. You can find a full listing of upcoming concerts at the Second Sunday Community Concerts page on Facebook.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona will host an open farm day on May 12th from 1 to 4 p.m. Guests can visit the friendly camels, enjoy a bird show, ride a camel, see Sheep Town, shop in the Camel Products gift shop, and take cool selfies with camels. For more information, you can visit cameldairy.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an exotic animal rescue facility in Alpine, invites you to get wild and support their nonprofit at Wild in the Country on May 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. Enjoy al fresco dining and live music in the company of the sanctuary's animals. You can also bid in live and silent auctions. You can find tickets and details at lionstigersandbears.org.
El Cajon invites you to the city's 6th annual America on Main Street on May 18th from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The event fosters respect of diverse ethnic and historical groups in the community. This year, the theme is Out of the World, recognizing the 50th anniversary of the 1969 moon landing. Other highlights include a tribute to Armed Forces Day, a naturalization ceremony for new American citizens, a scavenger hunt, over 150 booths including foods from around the world, face painting, balloon artists, a space and science area, first responder safety zone, carnival rites, and live entertainment including over 30 bands, community groups, and street performers. To learn more, visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
The El Cajon Valley Host Lions and the Winchester Widows will present their annual fundraiser, Gunsmoke, on Saturday, May 18th at El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 in El Cajon from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. The event includes live Western and bluegrass music, a silent auction, gambling chips, and food, all to support the Lions' community services for the underprivileged, and a program that provides eyeglasses to people in need.
Julian's annual Fiddle and Pickin competition will be held on May 25th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Julian's historic town hall. Hosted by the California Old Time Fiddlers Association, the competition draws nationally known talent and is open to all ages in fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and guitar. Details for this family-friendly event are available at sandiegofiddler.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section of our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals and events and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
Spring is here. Time to lace up your hiking boots and hit the trails. The county is offering a series of special hikes in county parks during May from leisurely strolls to a rugged warrior hike challenge. On May 4th, park staff will lead a spring summit hike in Vulcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve to the top of Vulcan Mountain, a strenuous 5-mile trip with wildflowers in bloom. On May 5th, you can hike with a ranger in Otay Lakes Park on an easy to moderate hike of less than 2 miles. Dictionary Hill, a new county preserve in Spring Valley, is offering hikes to the summit each Sunday in May to view panoramic San Diego vistas and see a rare butterfly ecosystem. At Oasis County Preserve in Lakeside, Sunday strolls throughout May, including a moderately challenging walk with views of the San Vicente Reservoir. El Monte County Park in Lakeside has early morning bird watching walks on Saturday, May 11th. On May 18th, there's also a guided hike at Dos Picos Park in Ramona, where you can learn about native plants and animal species. Then, on May 25th, a ranger will lead a hike all the way across the Santa Isabel East Preserve, an 8-mile hike through green hills abloom with wildflowers. Also, on May 25th, the county invites you to celebrate Memorial Day with a warrior hike challenge up to El Cajon Mountain, also known as El Capitan in Lakeside. County staff and San Diego River Park Foundation will lead 3 levels of hikes, including a 2-mile boot camp hike, a 6-mile recon level, and a 12-mile warrior level extreme hike. Refreshments will be provided. On May 26, Flint Springs County Park features a hike up Flint Park with a discussion of chaparral environment. To find details on all of these events, visit the San Diego County Parks and Recreation website at sdparks.org or the San Diego County Parks and Recreation Facebook page. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now, that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, My friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that, that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting-looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. Today, we are resuming our conversation with Richard Pennock, the former president and CEO, founding member, and now the media coordinator of the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association. Dick Pennock, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Helen. I'm glad to be here again with you. It's certainly my pleasure.
Last time, we learned about the size and operations of the Railway Museum. Our listeners can actually Google Pacific Southwest Railway, some variation of those words, and find you. But what's the main phone number?
The main phone number is area code 619-465-PSRM. That's 7776 on the dial.
I'm going to repeat that. It's 619-465-7776. Gosh, that's patriotic.
It is.
Sounds like the American Revolution. And it sounds like it was all the way out in Campo. You really have written the book on how to restore old trains and make them accessible to the public. Now, perhaps your most famous operation is that living history component, those weekend train rides at Campo. You are there as a conductor and locomotive engineer in full regalia, I might add. How much is a ticket, and do you still travel from Campo to Tecate?
We have weekend-only trains. We recommend that people check our website, psrm.org, to make sure of the schedule before they make the drive out there. It is a long way from San Diego, but certainly we feel it's worth the ride. We do not currently go to Tecate, and the reason is there is a railroad tunnel just over the international border on the Mexican side that burned and collapsed Christmas Day 2009. And since that time, the tunnel has not been repaired, and our monthly trips to Tecate had to be temporarily curtailed. So currently, we confine all of our operations and our special activities to the U.S. side of the border, between the border and Campo.
Why is the Campo train ride sometimes called the Polar Express?
Well, like all nonprofits, we do need to protect our bottom line, and we have many public activities, special activities during the year. The biggest one being our Santa train in the Christmas season. The first train runs the day after Thanksgiving, and we run 12 to 15 of those on consecutive weekends through the Christmas season. It is extremely popular, sold out every year, and as a matter of fact, Helen, members can buy their tickets for it right now.
Wonderful. Parents out there, get ready. Richard, at the dawn of the railroad, nobody had a union. There were no OSHA rules, occupational safety and health. So what were some of the dangers to, say, a brakeman on the railroad or another worker?
Interesting you ask about the brakeman, because on the railroad, particularly in the early days, that was one of the most dangerous occupations in train service. Now, even then, as now, you could get a job on the railroad in the office and never have to worry about ice and snow and sleet and storm. But the brakeman's job, before the days of air brakes, required that the brakemen, and they were all men in those days, had to ride the tops of the freight cars on a freight train in all weather, and they lost many of them in service. So there was generally always a job available, a job opening for brakemen, because the turnover was pretty high. It was a very hazardous occupation. Now, the passenger brakeman had it a little easier. He rode inside the passenger coaches normally with a conductor, so that wasn't quite so bad. But the freight brakeman on the freight trains, pretty horrible job.
Now, when people were riding the rails, which is the subject of poetry and song and folk music and all of the lore of the 1930s, really, what was that like for somebody to ride the rails? Where are you?
You mean like a hobo?
Yes.
Well,
in a word,
there were two different types of illegal rail riders, hobos and bums. Bums in those days had the same connotation it has today. Hobos sometimes were of a different cut. Sometimes they were riding the train illegally, but sort of looked the other way officially, because they were searching for work. They were moving from one workplace, one seasonal workplace possibly, to another, and many of the railroads often cut them a little slack and would not necessarily kick them off. They were all lumped under the term hobo, but there were differences. The bums often spent their evenings in jail when they were caught, whereas the hobos were, if you can say, maybe a somewhat higher echelon of itinerant society, shall we say.
Dick, the classic movie image is of a group of hobos. These are lonely guys in felt hats who go and offer to chop wood for a sandwich. They're all together in an empty freight car. They jump off at different points. Are we saying the wino, some poor tragic guy, is literally under that freight car? If we're riding the rails, we're so close to the rails, we're almost on them. Is that what that phrase means? It's a scary thing.
Well, not necessarily, but certainly there have been a lot of fatalities by bums, winos, others that aren't supposed to be on the property, going to sleep in a drunken stupor on a railroad track, which can be a very fatal exercise. And it happens often on the Mexican side of the border, particularly at night. It even happens on the U.S. side. It's an unfortunate part of railroad operation. There are people that don't watch the crossing signs when they're crossing railroad tracks in their car or on foot. And in spite of all the warning signs and all of the measures the railroads try to take to promote safety, there
we
are still
tragedies even now.
Still tragedies.
Exactly. Richard, you have been intimately involved with railroads for all of your life, long ago and far away, as a carefree, wind-in-your-hair young man. Didn't you ride the rails? Have you had personal experience?
I did, and I do. Even in my senior years, I continue to have experiences that I cherish very highly. I will tell you that I have never had professional railroad experience. I get asked that question a lot. But I did try to get a job with the railroad in Oakland, California, back in the mid-1950s, right after I got out of high school, because I wanted to become a fireman on a steam locomotive. And unfortunately, the railroad was getting rid of its steam locomotives at the time, and they wrote me back a Dear John letter saying, well, we're sorry, but we've laid off most of our firemen because we don't have a need for them anymore. And I always look back on those days and wonder if, should I have continued with trying to get a railroad career.
Were you hand-firing a coal-burning?
No, that was on an oil-burning locomotive. It would have been had I got the job. But I had that opportunity many years later when we founded the museum. But you asked about some other adventures that I have had over the years, and those have been many, particularly with regard to trains. And I had one, and I have to tell you up front, Helen, that this was strictly illegal. Do not encourage anybody to do this. It is strictly forbidden and against the law. But I was young, headstrong, adventurous kid in those days, and I and others decided to hop a freight train on the railroad that we currently operate on, and we were going to take this ride through Carrizo Gorge and just have a ball. So we encamped ourselves on a flat car in a freight train, and we were coming back from El Centro in late afternoon, and there are 17 tunnels just in the 11 miles of the Carrizo Gorge section. And the first tunnel is protected by an overhead structure called a telltale. Basically, it's just a wooden framework with ropes with knots on the end of them hanging down about 3 feet below the top of this gantry. And it's designed to warn a trainman on top of a car that there's a tunnel or limited head clearance coming up. So should they be facing the wrong way, it warns them that you better duck because there's something coming up that might take the upper part of your torso off. So I was facing the wrong way when we were coming up to the first tunnel and enjoying the view and the fresh air in my hair. And all of a sudden, this telltale hit me in the back. And I immediately flattened on top of the car, and had I not done so, the tunnel was coming up in about an eighth of a mile, and I would have been a dead person. So it was
very hazardous. Thank you for sharing that. And dear listeners, this does fall under the heading of don't try this at home, unless you are the body double for Sean Connery. I think we've all seen somebody or Steve McQueen fall to the roof, and suddenly there's a tunnel. And the audience is aghast. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Helen.
Dick Penick, this has been a wonderful conversation. I want to thank you for stopping by and sharing the lore, some of the lore. There's obviously much more from the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. We didn't even get into the archives, and I know you have a big, big archive of precious material. Thank you, listeners, for tuning into the Sounds of History. I'm Helen O'Field.
Newly elected County Supervisor Jim Desmond has been holding a series of community revitalization meetings in his district. Now he is starting a Borrego Springs Community Revitalization Committee to bring public resources to Borrego Springs. On Tuesday, May 7th, a public meeting will be held at 10 a.m. in the Borrego Library's community room. The public is encouraged to attend. The purpose of the committee is to support community leadership and collaboration while connecting Borrego Springs to the county resources necessary for solving issues identified by the community. Supervisor Desmond and representatives from county departments, who will also be there, want to hear from the community on important issues so that work can begin towards solutions. Reporting for East County Magazine from Borrego Springs, this is John Fisteer.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.